Welcome to the Veterans for Peace Radio Hour and podcast on Radio Free Nashville, 107.1 and 103.7, and streaming live at radiofreenashville.org. Today we are going to try to talk about and be relevant about the very fluid situation in Gaza. We're going to share the Veterans for Peace statement about Gaza and about Israel's activities. We're going to hear from Caitlin Johnstone, Al Jazeera, Crystal and Sager from Breaking Points with a dire warning. And we're going to try to give our own take about our own United States' inability to help this by negating UN calls for a ceasefire, sending two carrier groups to the region as a so-called deterrent, and sending billions of dollars of arms to a well-armed country which apparently is conducting war crimes and genocide. We finish up with a song about a human rights hero, Rachel Corrie. With that, the only good news is we're not talking about Ukraine. But first, my name is Jim Wohlgemuth, and I'm here with fellow Vietnam veteran Harvey Bennett. We are members of Veterans for Peace. Veterans for Peace is an international organization of military veterans and allies whose collective efforts are to build a culture of peace, humanity, equality, and justice. Just go to veteransforpeace.org. This radio show and podcast is on stations across the country, thanks to Pacifica Radio Network. We're also on SoundCloud, Anchor Podcast, Spotify, and your phone podcast app. Just search Veterans for Peace. Well, Veterans for Peace Radio R and Radio Free Nashville are supported in part by you, the listener, because it is you that keeps Radio Free Nashville going. And as a result, this radio show is then picked up by the Pacifica Radio Network and is shared across the country. So if you think this is important, just go to radiofreenashville.org, click on the donate button, and keep Harvey and I on the air in every time zone in the U.S. And if you support the work of Veterans for Peace, go to our website, veteransforpeace.org. We've got a donate button there also. This is going to be kind of a seat of the pants show as we try to make some sense out of something senseless, whatever is going on between Gaza and the Israelis right now. So we're just going to jump right into it and try to keep up with it. What is Al Jazeera saying?
Oh, man. They're saying this is going to be a disaster, this ground thing.
Yeah.
I mean, worse for the Palestinians, but for the Israelis, I said, you know, the people, the Israeli people no longer have confidence in the military.
No.
For good reason.
Yeah. I mean, and
so the military is demoralized. They're going into something they've never done. They've never done urban warfare. A lot of civilians are going to be killed.
I heard that, Seymour Hersh wrote an article that this is probably the end of Netanyahu, he's predicting, because Netanyahu let the country down as far as the terrorist attack. And yeah. I couldn't help but relate it to Tet back in 1968, where we were shocked nationwide in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Because of the way the Viet Cong attacked our forces up and down the country. And shortly thereafter resulted in Johnson saying he wasn't going to run for president again.
Have there been any demonstrations in Nashville with Palestinian flags?
I have not heard of one.
Wow.
Not yet. Of course.
Big Muslim community.
Yeah, I just got back from visiting Disney. And, you know, I just have to mention real quickly, Mary and I are keeping track of the kids and our daughter and whatever and having a nice time. Mm-hmm. And all the while, we can't help but think in the back of our head what the people in Gaza are going through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the people in Ukraine and, you know, Yemen and all over the place. And the disaster that the world is in so many places.
Yeah.
and here we are in the Disney community, in the Disney family,
right. Yes.
Where there's harmony and compassion and enjoyment, and you know, because that is the message there.
Fantasy.
Yeah, fantasy.
Right.
Exactly. Fantasy land where love reigns. You know who the good guys are and you know who the bad guys are. and it's just clear. Mm-hmm. And in the reality of the world, you really don't know who the good guys are or the bad guys are.
Well, you don't. In this particular situation, certainly there are bad guys on both sides, but the Israeli bad guys have all the power. And they've had the power to make it better and not be stuck in this
situation. Well, I wanted to share the Veterans for Peace.
Yeah, their statement I thought was pretty good.
Statement, yeah. And this came out October 12th. It says Veterans for Peace is an organization of former soldiers and allies who know too well the costs of war, the obvious visible wounds, the unseen wounds that curse us and our families for generations, and the cost to society of maintaining a military larger than the next 10 nations combined. Bitter experience taught us that war is insanity and suffering. We oppose all targeting of civilians. We denounce Hamas's attack on Israeli civilians and deplore Israel's crushing response in Gaza. We also recognize that this war did not start last week. It has gone on for decades. Over $150 billion of our tax dollars have provided Israel unlimited weaponry, and diplomatic cover has allowed it to expand its occupation such that 16 years ago, former President Jimmy Carter clearly labeled it apartheid. Our government fans the flames beneath the pressure cooker of occupation, and our taxes make us complicit. We are complicit. We should not pretend shock and at a violent response after Palestinian homes are destroyed to make way for Israeli settlers. And Gaza is locked down year after year by a draconian air, sea, and land blockade. History is defined by when you start to clock. In the war of competing propaganda, we recognize that U.S. officials fabricate incidents for corporate media consumption, such as President Biden claiming he saw photos of beheaded Israeli children. Hours later, as reported by news outlets from the Palestinian Chronicle to Business Insider, a White House spokesperson had to walk back Biden's claims. But just like the Bush administration claims in 1991, that Iraqi soldiers threw Kuwaiti babies out of incubators. Once the lie is out, the truth rarely catches up. This cycle of violence, coupled with the reality that war is an uncontrollable force with its own agency and purposes, result in the terrors we witness. Neither side has a military path to victory, which is why we strongly oppose our government's plans to send troops, aircraft carriers, and more munitions, and President Biden promised to fully support Israel's assault on the people of Gaza. We support a ceasefire, negotiations, and release of prisoners from all sides. Only a political process will dismantle the apartheid system, answer the grievances of the Palestinian people, create a democratic system that provides rights for all people of Israel and Palestine, and finally bring lasting security and peace. Without that political process, the cycle of violence will magnify, dooming more generations of Israelis and Palestinians. We lift up the words of our brother and sister military veterans, both Palestinian and Israeli members of Combatants for Peace. And all you have to do is search Combatants for Peace, and you'll see a mixture of Palestinian and Israeli people saying, hey, we've had enough. Our hearts are with all the victims and their families, and we hope for safe return of those held captive and for the safety of the civilians trapped inside Gaza. Together, we must retain our humanity and value all life as sacred and cherished. The only solution is ending the occupation, uniting Israelis and Palestinians, and focusing our collective efforts on achieving peace. So that's a long but valuable statement.
Good. I think it really is stronger than some of the other ones I've seen. Yes. Peace was good, but not that good. Tikkun from out in San Francisco, Michael Lerner and the radical Jewish community out there, I was disappointed in their statement. I just didn't think it was very strongly. They weren't forceful in their language, and I was just disappointed. And I don't have an issue with their position, but I just thought the statement fell far short of what it could have said, and certainly fell short of what the Veterans for Peace statement did.
We want to make it clear that we condemn the brutality coming from Hamas, but we cannot say that their attack was not provoked, if you've been paying attention. But, you know, I really question the motives of Hamas at this point, because I really thought that the word was getting out about the apartheid state that Israel was inflicting on the people of Palestine because of the knocking down of houses and the shooting of, you know, peaceful protesters.
Palestinian-American journalist.
Exactly, a Palestinian-American journalist. All I can see coming out of this attack is despair and revenge, and the Western countries coalescing around Israel's white right-wing government.
Western countries are going to black Israel no matter what they do and whatever reason. I made a kind of a list of recent provocations that are, to me, are moving the needle further and further toward annihilation of Palestinians as a factor. Number one, the map that Benjamin Netanyahu brought to the United Nations, then he labeled the new Middle East.
Yeah.
And it showed Israel, no West Bank, no Gaza, no East Jerusalem. And where was the outrage about it? Did the U.S. protest that?
No.
But you better believe the Palestinians in the Arab world noticed it. The storming of Al-Aqsa Mosque over recent weeks, especially during the High Holy Days. I mean, all these ultra-nationalists, ultra-Orthodox Israelis were storming the mosque and filling it and doing their own prayers in there. I mean, just complete sacrilege and outrageous, and something that any Muslim would be infuriated about. Settler violence, which we know.
Yeah, so there was actually Israelis going to that holy mosque and doing their own prayers.
Yeah. And not allowing the Muslims to even access it. That's the third holiest site in all of Islam.
Yeah.
West Bank settler violence, which has continued to accelerate all year with complete destruction of, you know, and you know, just the burning and destruction of entire Palestinian villages and killing of Palestinians by these settlers, with the Israeli Defense Force standing there watching just in case a Palestinian tried to resist or something. I mean, no settler has been charged or indicted or otherwise held accountable for this horrendous crimes. And they're continuing. The IDF raids against the Jenin refugee camp, unprecedented in their violence. The use of helicopter gunships against a refugee camp, unprecedented. The death toll in the West Bank is the highest it's ever been. Israeli government ministers calling for wiping out Palestinian villages publicly.
And this is all coming from the right-wing government of Benjamin Netanyahu.
Why is the U.S. quiet on this? The acceleration of new settlements. I mean, you know, they keep announcing more and more settlement activity. Where is the U.S. on that? They're not saying a word. Home demolitions. If you know anything about home demolitions, don't waste your time on cable TV or the New York Times. I haven't read the Washington Post, but I mean, is it in any media reporting of these things?
No.
The only thing I've seen it on is Twitter.
Yeah.
I have people that I follow on Twitter, and you can actually see the videos of these home demolitions in East Jerusalem.
Yeah, I mean, you can find them in YouTube. You can find them on Rumble.
Yeah.
But you're not going to find them on mainstream media.
And, you know, the families are given like 24 hours to demolish their own home. And if they don't, then they come in and do it and charge them $10,000.
And this forced evacuation from the north to the south. When I heard that, I just thought of the Trail of Tears.
Yeah.
Again, just the illegal movement of a people from one place to another, like Andrew Jackson did with the Cherokee Indians. I mean, just you've got to get up and you've got to go. A lot of them are thinking, okay, we go to the South. What are we going to do there?
Even the convoys that the Israelis said, this is the safe route. They attacked the convoy and killed them.
I mean, if I was a Palestinian, I don't know whether I'd follow the instructions of Israel. Like, what is the status with Egypt? Egypt is a Muslim country. So,
yes.
But I understand that they're not being helpful to their Muslim brothers.
Well, they've got all this aid there, but Israel will not permit it to come into Israel. I mean, and the Egyptians opened their side, but the Israeli side is still closed. And, you know, the other thing is this whole humanitarian corridor thing is baloney. It's, and what that amounts to is forced relocation. And they, you know, their Israelis' idea is to go and have them all forced to go into the Sinai Desert. And once they're there, you think Israel will ever let them come back to Gaza?
Oh, heavens no.
No. So a lot of, in fact, most Palestinians are saying they're not going south. You know, they're going to die if they go south. They're going to die if they stay home. They'd rather die in their own homes.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of Jewish demonstrations against the Israelis. Jewish Voice of Peace actions across the country. Thanks to incredible efforts by JVP members, on a few hours' notice, over 2,000 Jews protested in front of the offices and homes of elected officials in New York City, San Francisco, Chicago, Seattle, and Los Angeles to demand action to prevent the genocide of Palestinians. Protesters ranged in age from 20 to 85, including elected state officials, descendants of Holocaust survivors, students, and rabbis. 80 were arrested as they blockaded the pathways in the homes and offices of elected officials. Thousands more supported them, singing Jewish songs of resistance and peace. And they had large banners say, "Stop genocide against Palestinians." They had another poster that said, "Never again." And then two boxes under it. And then one box says, "To Jews." And the next box says, "To anyone." And they marked anyone.
To anyone. Exactly. Exactly. So, what was the organization? Jewish
Voice for Peace.
Voices for Peace.
I'm a member.
I know you are.
They're calling for actions, and everyone needs.
And I have not seen actions supporting Netanyahu and the Israeli government. I have not seen it. I'm sure they're there. But I've just not seen them.
Well, I think they know they're.
I mean, outside of the White House and the Congress.
Well, I think, you know, AIPAC, and I think the conservative Jewish establishment knows that they've got their backing to whatever Israel's doing is good. Have to back it, you know. And there are a lot of temples where if you say anything critical of Israel, you're not going to be comfortable going to that temple
because you're gonna, that's for sure.
I mean, we have friends who've gone from one temple to the next trying to find a place where they can be honest.
Veterans for Peace is trying to be honest by saying we just need to stop, or they just need to stop. And the United States needs to help Israel stop.
Yeah.
Initially, and I saw this as very dangerous, initially they were trying to link Hamas to support from Iran. And I'm thinking, oh, good gracious, that's all we need is for Israel to attack Iran.
Well, Iran has warned them repeatedly. They have to stop these horrendous violations of human rights, or there's great danger that this will spread.
Oh, for sure. You know, because we know Israel, even though I don't think it's publicized, Israel does have a nuclear bomb.
They have nuclear weapons. And if any country would use one in a situation like this, it would be Israel.
It's exactly. I wouldn't count on the sanity of Netanyahu. And
Netanyahu's been wanting that for a long time, and he thinks he has an excuse.
So, Harvey, I've got a clip. We've been talking for quite a while, but I do have a clip from Caitlin Johnstone, who kind of gave a really good description about what's going on. Do you want to take a listen?
Okay.
It's not the Israel-Hamas war. It's the Israel-Gaza massacre.
Okay, we got it. This is written by Caitlin Johnstone, but read by her partner, Tim Foley.
Notes from the edge of the narrative matrix. Stop calling it the Israel-Hamas war. It's the Israel-Gaza massacre. Calling it the Israel-Hamas war creates the false impression that this is a war that is directed exclusively at Hamas, when it's really an ethnic purge that's directed at all Palestinians in Gaza. The child body count alone makes it clear that this isn't a war against Hamas. I saw an anonymous account point out on Twitter that the number of children killed in this onslaught after 1 week already exceeds the number of children killed after a year and a half of fighting in Ukraine, per the United Nations. Laying complete siege to a civilian population and bombing anything that stands would be an extraordinary abomination in any war. And this is not a war. It's an enclosed shooting range with military explosives and human targets. Here's a quote from the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations. I really feel sorry for the suffering of the people of Gaza, but we should all remember, they elected Hamas 18 years ago. Americans should probably worry about the rapid legitimization of this idea that civilians who have a government that kills people are all legitimate targets. According to the logic of collective punishment we're seeing circulated with regard to Gazans and Hamas, all American civilians deserve to die horribly because they permit themselves to be ruled by a regime which is orders of magnitude more violent and destructive than Hamas. Hamas is responsible for Hamas's decisions. Israel is responsible for Israel's decisions. Hamas is responsible for the Hamas attack. Israel is responsible for provoking the attack via apartheid abuses and for bombing civilians in retaliation for it. It's not actually complicated. Israel has been struggling with a rapidly worsening PR crisis ever since Palestinians started getting internet access and smartphones with video cameras and exposing Israeli apartheid abuses. So if you're wondering why they cut off Gaza's internet and electricity, that's why. Israel was 100% aware that cutting off power and internet access to Gaza would prevent Palestinians from recording and publishing footage of its coming war crimes. They struck a fatal blow to citizen journalism in Gaza, thereby blinding the whole world to what's happening there. There's a tweet by NBC News breaking, Hamas intentionally targeted elementary schools in Israel, instructed terrorists to seize hostages. The mass media asked you to believe the Hamas attack was unprovoked. Then they asked you to believe blatant babies on bayonets atrocity propaganda. Now they're asking you to believe Jewish kids were in school before dawn on a Saturday morning in Israel. Western journalism, folks. The only reason so many Israel apologists scrambled to circulate unverified stories about beheaded babies and mass rapes instead of waiting for evidence was to make the real atrocities Israel is perpetrating and will continue to perpetrate in Gaza look reasonable and appropriate. After this current crisis is over, I'm probably going to think a lot about the fact that MSNBC suspended three Muslim reporters during Israel's Gaza assault because it didn't want Muslims reporting on it. I used to think all genocidal massacres are bad, but then some really smart Israel apologists explained to me that this genocidal massacre is completely different, because this genocidal massacre's perpetrators believe they are doing the right thing for a good reason. If there were 2 million Jewish people trapped by Christians in a giant open-air prison and placed under total siege, being told that half of them had 24 hours to relocate into the other half or be killed, nobody would have any confusion about what they were witnessing. Everyone's got a serious case of 9/11 brain right now. You know about 9/11 brain, kids? It's when something scary happens and everyone goes insane and starts believing a bunch of lies and consenting to power-serving agendas that do exponentially more damage than the initial trauma. I keep getting people acting like it's controversial or even outlandish to say that Israel is an apartheid state. It's not. The leading mainstream Western human rights groups say it's apartheid, as does the top human rights group in Israel. They said we need more censorship because of COVID. They said we need more censorship because of Russia. They said we need more censorship because of January 6th. Now they say we need more censorship because of the Hamas attack. Maybe they just want more censorship. There's a tweet saying that Israel killed 724 Palestinian children in Gaza within a week. The primary job of Israel apologists in the coming days is going to be finding ways to spin this self-evidently terrible thing as perfectly fine and appropriate. Before engaging an Israel apologist in a debate about the ongoing Gaza purge, it's probably a good idea to ask them to clarify whether there's any amount of death and destruction Israel could inflict there that would cause them to stop supporting what Israel is doing. Is there a death count they'd consider too much? How many dead Palestinian civilians are they willing to tolerate in this current operation? Tell them to give you a number. If they can't give you a number and place a limit on how much human butchery they're willing to accept from Israel, that tells you they're not actually defending Israel for reasons that have anything to do with humanitarian concerns or valuing human life. They're saying they'll defend Israel no matter what it does and no matter how many atrocities it commits, because their support for Israel is entirely based on ideology and/or religion. In which case, there's no reason to continue the debate, because you can't debate someone out of their Christian fundamentalism, or Zionism, or Islamophobia, or whatever it is that's driving their support. They're not arguing with you out of any interest in morality or justice or truth or facts. They're arguing with you solely to advance an agenda. The greatest trick white anti-Semites ever pulled was getting Jews to leave Western society in droves and move to a faraway country to spend their lives beating up Muslims.
That was Tim Foley reading an article by Caitlin Johnstone. And, you know, that last little bit, the biggest thing that Western white people did was to get a bunch of Jewish people to go form the state of Israel and beat up Muslims. I've not really heard that perspective before, but, you know, that sends this back, what we're seeing right now, all the way back to 1948.
I mean, it's true that after the end of World War II, European Jews who had survived the concentration camp and in general were not allowed to go back to their homes by the people in those countries.
Yeah.
Because they were anti-Semitic people, basically. I mean, so many of the massacres of Jews in Eastern Europe when the Nazis occupied were not just by the Nazis, but by the people in those countries, including Ukraine.
Local populations, including Ukraine.
Yeah, Belarus. I can understand that Jewish people would be attracted to some alternative.
Yeah, where they could have their own safe state.
And, you know, they were pawns in a lot of ways.
I think, as things are now, that there might be a possibility for a two-state solution if Israel would get on board and respond respectfully to the humanity of Palestinians. But that is only going to happen if the rest of the world recognizes the devastation Israel is perpetrating right now on Palestinian women and children, and takes note of the apartheid that most of the world has been ignoring for decades.
And they've got a long ways to go.
Yeah, long way to go. So, but speaking of defending Israel, Mary said, did you see that that United States sent a second carrier unit,
yeah,
in to support Israel? And I'm going, a second one?
Yeah, carrier task force. Yes. I think that's for Iran's consumption.
Oh, I'm sure. But, you know, Iran, I don't think, is intimidated. But the problem is, if Israel runs amok in it and does something to attack Iran, then all bets are off.
Well, I think Netanyahu's hope is that, I don't think Netanyahu wants a war with Iran.
No.
I don't think he believes Israel would come out very well. But he'd love to have the U.S. go to war with Iran.
Oh, for sure. And so he's
now he's got two carriers, so he's going to do what he can to arrange that.
Have some sort of provocation.
There's a pretty good clip from Al Jazeera. If you go to Al Jazeera website and you go to Inside Story, and they have something on Blinken's, what Blinken is trying to accomplish in his trip to the Middle East. The people who are talking are involved in think tanks focused on the Middle East. Actually, one of them is a former U.S. Army colonel. But basically, the press is characterizing Blinken's trip as trying to arrange humanitarian relief or humanitarian corridors and all that. He's not telling Israel, turn back the power, turn back the water, you know, anything like that that would really help. He's talking about some way to expedite the removal of the people of Gaza from Gaza, basically, which is what Israel wants anyway. Right. But he's also, they just said, because of the growing demonstrations around the world and Middle East countries as well against what Israel is doing, he's going to some of these governments to talk to the heads of state to make sure that that they do what they need to stabilize their regime, and including repressing people who try to protest.
Israel-Hamas war, what does the U.S. want from Arab countries?
Yeah, that's it.
That's it? All right.
As Israel intensifies its shelling of Gaza, what does Washington want from Arab countries? The U.S. Secretary of State is in the region to show support for Israel, but can Biden's administration prevent the war from spilling over in the Middle East? I'm James Bayes, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. Well, let's now bring in our panel of guests to discuss all of this. In East Jerusalem, Yara Hawari, a senior analyst at the Al-Shabaka, the Palestinian Policy Network, an independent think tank. In Washington, D.C., Rich Outzen, he's a retired U.S. Army colonel who works as a geopolitical consultant. And in Munich, we have Nancy Okale. She's president and CEO of the think tank Center for International Policy. Welcome to you all. We have, oh, he's not actually seeking a ceasefire. In fact, in all likelihood, Yara, he's preparing the Arab world, isn't he, for a greater conflict with Israeli troops entering a ground offensive stage.
Absolutely. And I think there are really three main things that Blinken has been focusing on. Firstly, that's the stability, or what he calls the stability of the region. And this is particularly important in light of the many protests of solidarity, which has seen tens of thousands hit the streets from Baghdad to Tunis. And indeed, the Arab governments will be worried about, you know, threats to their own stability amidst their inaction, because the Palestinian struggle, despite normalization between many governments, is still held dear to the hearts of so many across the Middle East. So Blinken will want reassurance from these heads of state that they will be maintaining the stability and internal repression. But also the issue of Israeli captives. You know, he was in Qatar, as you mentioned, and I think, you know, this is one of the few countries that has a direct line with Hamas. But what's interesting is that Blinken seems more concerned about the Israeli captives than the Israeli regime itself. And we've seen various Israeli ministers, army personnel, completely dismiss the recovery of captives in favor of bombing Gaza into oblivion. And we have reports from Gaza that indeed some Israeli captives have died in the bombardment. But I also think, and this is, you know, one of the most important points that Blinken will be trying to emphasize is the creation of this so-called humanitarian corridor. And I think, you know, we have to pause for a second and think about what that means. You know, on the basis that they're describing it as this safe passage for Palestinians to get out of Gaza. But the fear is that actually this is not a humanitarian corridor at all, but rather a permanent march of exile. We know that the Israeli regime does not respect any of the international conventions on the right of return for refugees. So there is no expectation whatsoever that once the bombardment has stopped, that Palestinians will be allowed back to their homes. So what Blinken is essentially doing, and probably consciously so, is that he's facilitating the ethnic cleansing of Gaza.
Facilitating the ethnic cleansing of Gaza? Our own State Department?
Rich, let me bring you in. We've seen in the first stage very, very staunch support for Israel from the Secretary of State, despite some of the things we're seeing on the ground that Yara's just talked about, despite comments coming from Israeli ministers imposing a complete siege, the defence minister calling Gazans human animals. He has very much taken the Israeli side. Is that because you're there consuming US media? Is that partly because of the media coverage and the public opinion in the United States, would you say?
Well, I think it's due in part to those things. Certainly the media coverage and the framing, the narratives, if you will, in Washington and most of Europe Certainly Western Europe differs quite a bit from what one sees in most of the Middle East. But I mean, look, empirically, not just in terms of framing, this is a very different sort of attack. So most Americans have taken the scenes that came out, especially in the early hours of the attack on Saturday and Sunday, of specific individual targeting of Israelis as an intolerable atrocity. And similar to what happened in the United States after 9/11, when, you know, there was a visceral response to that that galvanized support for the strongest sorts of actions, I think there's sort of an echo of that in terms of very strong support publicly, with the exception of some folks on university campuses, for Israel to take similarly strong steps. Now, as you'll recall, we were led into strategic error, perhaps, with the invasion of Iraq and other steps because of the anger over outrageous terrorist acts. So one has to take the moral outrage and balance that with what's going to actually work to stabilize and reduce tensions. And that's what Blinken's trip is all about. On the one hand, he had to validate the anger, not just of Israelis, but the American people about the nature of these attacks on civilians. And yes, we can talk about whether that's a double standard with regards to the suffering of Gaza civilians, but there is a palpable anger in the United States. So he has to respect that and show solidarity with Israel, while at the same time trying to keep this from blowing over into something that kills the Abraham Accords, kills regional normalization efforts between Israel and Arab states, and potentially brings in other combatants.
Nancy, let me bring you in. Stage two of the trip, he went from Jerusalem, from Tel Aviv, to Jordan, and he met the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in Jordan. And interestingly, worth noting, I think, he didn't go there on his normal jet. He had to take a US C-17 plane. In terms of meeting Mahmoud Abbas in Jordan, that was a snub, wasn't it?
Yes, sort of. And I think it's just like one of the different ways that the US government is trying to appease Israel and making sure to send a message that they are not both on the same level. And this has been reflected very clearly and strongly about the support for Israel. Of course, Israel has the right to defend itself, but it doesn't have the right to attack civilians and have the ultimatum that was given, basically trying to get a license to kill, giving 1.1 million Palestinians in Gaza 24 hours to move. So I think this is all consistent with what we have been seeing with the U.S. administration. It is trying to send a message that, you know, both countries are not on the same level, even though, to President Biden's credit, he did stress the point of observing international humanitarian law and supporting and preserving civilian lives.
Yara, Nancy said there, it was while he was in Jordan that Israel then issued this evacuation order that some international lawyers say is basically a case of forced transfer. There's been such strong reaction to that. The UN Secretary General strongly urging Israel to rescind the order. The International Committee of the Red Cross saying the instructions are not compatible with international humanitarian law. And the World Health Organization saying moving severely ill people amounts to a death sentence. What's your reaction, Yara, to the fact that then Anthony Blinken really didn't criticize that at all?
I mean, it's shocking, but also not surprising at the same time. The US has been a staunch ally of the Israeli regime for many years. It's seen as sort of this regime that protects its interests in the Middle East and is really given carte blanche to commit a whole host of war crimes against the Palestinian people. I think what's particularly shocking about this moment is that all these organizations have actually come out and alluded to ethnic cleansing. They've even used words such as genocide, and yet we still have Blinken and also others, including, you know, politicians from the European Union, encouraging this, not even playing it down, which is what what they usually do. They are actually encouraging this by sending, for example, the US has sent munitions to the Israeli regime and has stated time and time again, you know, that the US is an unwavering friend of the Israeli regime as it commits these massive war crimes. Moving 1.1 million people to the south of Gaza is not possible in the time frame that they've given. And they know this. And they know that many people in hospitals will not be able to move. They know that they have bombed roads and infrastructure. We even have reports and video evidence of Israeli regime bombardments targeting convoys of people leaving. So many Palestinians are actually choosing not to leave because at the end of the day, they know that there is a likelihood that they will be bombed and that they will die and that they would prefer to do so in their own homes. And I think we have to be very clear that the US and Blinken are facilitating this and encouraging it. They are warmongering.
Rich, the West all seemed to be on the same page a week ago, yet we've seen the developments of the continued bombardment, this order for people to move, and now you're getting comments like this, the Irish Prime Minister cutting off power, cutting off fuel supplies and water supplies. That's not the way a respectable democratic state should conduct itself. And on the evacuation, the EU High Representative for Foreign Policy, Joseph Borrell, evacuation is utterly, utterly impossible to implement. The Western partners are beginning to split. Do you think Washington will be worried?
Well, it's actually consistent with historical patterns. If you look at previous bouts of violence involving Israel and either neighboring states that have attacked Israel or gotten involved in war with Israel or sort of outbursts of violence involving the Palestinian territories, typically what happens is there's sort of a clock that starts ticking, right? And both for Washington and key allies in Europe, there's normally a great deal of sympathy for Israel, which from my point of view in this case is absolutely warranted given the nature of the terror attacks. But then there's also a fear that Israel's response will be asymmetric and will inflict too much pain, not on the Hamas terrorists who carried these attacks out, but on the average Palestinians who are trying to live their life in Gaza. I'm also sympathetic to that. So this sort of spinning off or splitting off of a monolithic support for Israel is very typical. And it will accelerate, so there's sort of a clock going on this. And Israel has two tasks, really, in my view. The first is to change the nature of Hamas's activities in the Gaza Strip so that this can never happen again. We can't ignore the nature of what was allowed to happen. And Gaza is ruled over by Hamas, but we should not make the mistake of thinking Hamas represents the Palestinian Authority, the Palestinian people. They're a terror group, in this case, at least part of them a terror group, that executed these attacks. So while removing their ability to reprise this, Israel really has to be mindful that, yes, even people in Washington will increasingly become impatient with and uncomfortable with scenes of dead civilians in Gaza and the movement of, as you say, the 1.1 million people. So that's the wheel turning, and Israel has to be mindful of that as it conducts its response.
Nancy, from Qatar, the Secretary of State went very briefly to Bahrain. It wasn't on the original list, and he only stopped off at the airport, and then to Saudi Arabia and UAE. Now, these countries are different from Qatar because they are either countries that have normalised relations with Israel, or Saudi Arabia, according to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, was on the cusp of doing so. How difficult, Nancy, do you think it will be in these countries, given that public opinion may be in a very different place from the opinion of the leadership?
I think this moment and the escalation that we have been seeing over the past week have shed light on how the assumptions and the foundations upon which the so-called Abraham Accords for Peace have been problematic and have been fragile as well. The Abraham Accords and all like the efforts for normalization have ignored the people of the regions and focused on forging peace deals or defense deals, as the controversial U.S.-Saudi Arabia defense deal that has been in discussions over the past weeks. This has been such a short-sighted view that thinking that you could have, first of all, I mean, a defense or normalization deal with leaders who are known to be authoritarian and not representing the public, and expect that this would be sustained and could be stable. Now, the events of the past 7 days have shown that this is not possible because the situation is unfair. Then the deals themselves have been forged on terms that were not giving justice to Palestinians, basically giving crumbs to the Palestinians while focusing on arms deals between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. All this is contributing to the very well understanding that everyone is now hopefully aware of, that you cannot forge such deals or agreements for normalization with, I would say, not just authoritarian views, but I'd say the individuals, and this is the crown prince of Mohammed bin Salman. You are forging a deal with an individual, not a country, and not with an agreement or the approval of the people. The reason why most Arab leaders right now are into negotiations and showing support for Saudi Arabia, showing support for Palestine, is of course for Palestine, but also for their own stability, because they are very well aware that as the situation continues, as we see the videos emerging of Gazans being bombed, even when they're trying to follow the rules and evacuate, this would not sit in well with the public. There will be protests, and they are not ready to face this. And that's why they are trying hard right now to play an effective role.
This is such a mess. And I don't trust Blinken to accomplish much of anything positive.
He's carrying water for the Israelis.
Yeah, and the thing is, you've got so many different players, and you don't want anything spilling over from there. You got the Iranians. It's really complex. I think there's a close association between Hezbollah in Lebanon and Iran. It's more complex than Ukraine, Russia, NATO, United States.
In some ways, it's complex. In some ways, it's basic. Israel thinks they can do anything they want to do.
Yeah.
Because we've taught them that they can get away with anything. That's what that's been their experience with the U.S. and every administration.
And then I found this update from Crystal and Sagar about the geopolitical situation. And this time they're talking Iran.
You know, a geopolitical crisis unfolding in terms of how major nation states are also responding.
We're at the point of risking a much wider war. You now have Iran indicating that they do not particularly want to get involved, but that they will have to get involved, they say, if the Israeli operation in Gaza continues. This is according to a report in Axios. Let me just read you a little bit of that so I can get the specifics absolutely correct. Iran sent a message to Israel on Saturday stressing it does not want further escalation in the Hamas-Israel war, but that it will have to intervene if that Israeli operation in Gaza continues, according to two diplomatic sources with knowledge of the situation. So behind the scenes, they say the Iranian foreign minister met with a UN envoy to the Middle East on Saturday in Beirut. That is where the UN envoy urged the Iranians to help prevent a spillover of the conflict in Gaza and Israel to the wider region. But the Iranian foreign minister replied, Iran does not want the conflict to turn into a regional war, wants to try to help with the release of civilians who are being held hostage by Hamas in Gaza, but stressed that Iran has its red lines. He said if the Israeli military operation continues, and especially if Israel follows through on its promise of a ground offensive in Gaza, which again appears to be imminent, Iran will have to respond. In addition, the Iranian foreign minister said he met Hezbollah leader Nasrallah in Lebanon and that all scenarios were considered. Says Iran cannot remain a spectator, adds, if scope of war expands, the U.S. will suffer heavy losses as well. That last part per Al Jazeera, and I don't think I have to emphasize to anyone what an incredibly dire scenario that would be if we have a broader war throughout the Middle East region, bringing in Iran.
Yeah, I think we're on the precipice of a major war, Crystal. Unfortunately, I don't see a situation out of it. Already, the president, you know, has been sending some messages about Palestinian civilians. There was a tweet earlier this morning. But the truth is that the actual diplomatic major effort in order to open the actual Gaza-Egyptian border has already failed and does not appear to be open. Already, they tried to negotiate where 500 American citizens who are inside of Gaza would be able to cross into Egypt. Egypt actually blocked the crossing, said, no, we'll only do that if we allowed aid through. And then Israel actually did not agree to allowing the aid into Gaza because they said they want to screen weapons. But this just highlights, for example, the nightmare situation which is unfolding. These people don't have anywhere else to go. And one of the, you know, we're going to talk, I think, a lot about and break some of this down. But I think we do need to emphasize how dangerous the situation is right now. Two carrier strike groups is an unprecedented amount of firepower in the region. Don't forget, you know, we haven't seen that type of posturing in the Middle East really since the days of the Iraq War, just to give people an idea. And we are talking here about Hezbollah and Israel, which already, as of this morning, Crystal, were exchanging fire both inside of Lebanon and across the border. Confirmed incidents, including multiple Israeli strikes on the Lebanese soil, which, you know, every step closer to not only a two-front war leads to an expansion both inside of Israel and will not leave the United States untouched. I cannot emphasize this enough. There is no way that this stays contained to the situation without involving us, specifically because of the Biden administration and really the bipartisan support that very easily could lead us into a wider conflict.
Yeah, and so far, Biden, Tony Blinken, as you mentioned, almost all of Congress, with very few exceptions, has said, you know, Israel has a right to defend herself. I don't think hardly anyone would disagree with that.
Yeah.
But you know, backing them unequivocally with really very few words and certainly no actions intended to curb the civilian damage that's being inflicted on innocent Gazans at this point. So it was striking to hear at least a different tone from President Biden this morning, which I think speaks to his concerns about the risk of a broader conflagration, where he says in a tweet, we must not lose sight of the fact that the overwhelming majority of Palestinians had nothing to do with Hamas's appalling attacks and are suffering as a result of them. I mean, I take that as an indication they also are very concerned about this thing spiraling out of control into a broader war that, you know, becomes basically right, uncontrollable at that point.
If Hezbollah gets involved in this war, we are talking about tens of thousands of Israelis who will be killed, not to mention the broader escalation that could, you know, occur on behalf of the United States. And who knows whether what agreements have been made as to U.S. involvement, whether we would get involved into a broader war with Lebanon, and then how Iran itself will respond. You know, they've talked now. They've made a pretty declarative statement. Are they going to follow through on it or not? Those are all the big questions.
And I just want to be clear that we condemn Hamas's attack on Israel. You know, it, and I still am worried about their motivation. Sure, we know there's histories of provocation here, but I still don't think this was a wise thing to do, even if they wanted to call attention, because I still see the whole Western world lining up behind Israel and Netanyahu, and that the right-wing government who says flatten Gaza.
Right.
And so we've given our perspective. We've read Veterans for Peace perspective. This is just another mess that the world is facing. Yeah.
Well, Jewish Voice for Peace wants to publish a full-page ad in the New York Times calling for an end to this massacre and genocide, and it costs money, so if you want to help get that done, go to Jewish Voice for Peace website and donate toward that.
And that's Jewish Voices for Peace.
Jewish Voice for Peace.
Okay, you just Google that. I can tell you that I called my local representative, Mark Green, and I just said, I'm a member of Veterans for Peace, and we just want this to stop, and we think the United States can stop it. And you know, I got a very cold response from the staff person.
Yeah, what'd they say?
He just said, I'll pass that along to the congressman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. But you know, oftentimes I can engage in some conversation, but not this one.
It's scary on so many levels. Anyone who thinks this can happen and that's going to be the end of it is living in a dream world. This is not a movie. Certainly feel compassion for the Israelis who people could say, well, they were complicit, but I don't know that they were that much more complicit than us U.S. taxpayers. You know?
Right.
We're the ones who provided all the impunity for Israel to do whatever they wanted to do. And now you've got that mindset in a situation where they have nukes.
Yeah. And
to support Israel, you have to support nukes.
Yeah.
And where does that lead?
Where does that lead? So we will leave it there. And as a little advice or a little recommendation or a little bit of homework, or we're asking, call your congressperson and say, force a ceasefire. Get Biden to force a ceasefire. We could do it. Let's not escalate this thing at all. So as we end with a song, Harvey found this one by Jim Page about an American hero, Rachel Corrie, who lost her life 20 years ago doing what she could to get in the way of Israel and support civilians in Gaza. Here is I'd Rather Be Dancing. So for a quick update since our recording, all we know is that upwards of 500 Palestinians were killed near a hospital in Gaza City just before Biden landed to talk to Netanyahu. Biden was supposed to meet with Netanyahu and then go to Jordan and meet with the king and a Palestinian representative, Mahmoud Abbas, I believe. But the Palestinians, the Muslims, Jordan pulled out after the hospital attack. Israel claims the attack was Hamas rocket misfiring. And I just can't help but think maybe it was just another example of what Harvey pointed out, that this was just Israel doing just exactly what they want, with tacit U.S. support or no accountability. Okay, with that, let's get on with the song.
You know I was always the one that could never stand idly by and watch while the bullies beat up on the weaker ones that had to do something to try. And I never gave up on people, though it could be better somehow. Morality's compass, you gave it to me and I still follow it now. Well, I couldn't stop thinking about it, I couldn't get it out of my mind. The pictures, the stories, the plight of the people in the occupied Palestine, and how my government makes me complicit with the political aid that they send. So I packed up my bags and I headed to Rafah to work with the ISM. And I'd rather be dancing, dancing and falling in love. Oh, but I could just watch from a distance and what am I made of? Mama, these people are so good to me. They treat me like I'm one of their own. Feed me and see to my needs and let me sleep in their homes. And Papa, their lives are so hard. The gunshots every night, the strip searches, the humiliations. Papa, it just isn't right. Well, I can feel my white skin privilege is there in my American face. I could wave my passport around like a flag and I would be safe in this place. For these child soldiers of Israel, they look like the boys back home. And if it wasn't for American money, they'd have to leave these people alone. And I'd rather be dancing, dancing to Pat Benatar. Oh, but somebody has to do something about it. Here we are. Mm-hmm. tractors are coming today. They're like tanks with bulldozer blades. The name on the side says Caterpillar, and that means they're American made. Well, I am American too, and I'll be where everybody can see. So if they want to run over those houses today, they're gonna have to run over me. Well, it's dangerous taking a stand, but it's dangerous running away.